On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I are joined by Jonathan Charks of The Ringer to talk about all things Brooklyn Nets. We go through Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, and much more. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass. Joining me, as always, my man, Marcus Berhal. And Marcus, we have a very special guest coming up in a couple minutes. It's Jonathan Charks from The Ringer.
Yeah, very excited to talk to Jonathan. Been a fan of his for a while. He does a lot of NBA draft stuff for The Ringer, but he wrote an article about the Nets last week, so we wanted to have him on to talk about that, talk about the team. Get into Caris LeVert, Jared Allen, some random stuff around the league. So yeah, very fun talk.
Exactly. I always love when, you know, we have a very Nets-centric viewpoint, because we're Locked On Nets, of course. But I always like when you get someone who covers the league nationally on, just because they sometimes have like different perspectives and takes, because they're covering every team from a very broad lens. So especially when it's like guys that you watch night in and night out, and you're just like frustrated by little idiosyncrasies, you know, sometimes they can help get you back to earth on some of these takes where you've kind of gone off your rocker.
Yeah, and shine some more perspective on like the other teams that we don't really get to watch as much.
Yep, no, exactly. And without further ado, we will throw it to Jonathan. Great, so now we are joined by Jonathan Charks of The Ringer. Jonathan, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Wanted to have you on because you had a great article recently on The Ringer about the Nets. The Nets are falling apart before the NBA's restart. Unfortunately, Nets fans and listeners of this podcast know that all too well. Spencer Dinwiddie was not confirmed out when you wrote the article, but he is now. Bradley Beal, it came out today. He's also out. So a lot going on now with the bubble. Wanted to get your thoughts right off the top, just like about the bubble as a whole and like how many guys are now starting to drop out, and like we're still a few weeks out, so still more could happen. But what are your thoughts on like the plan and everything that's happened so far leading up to this restart?
Well, I mean, it seems like the bottom of the East is just totally gone, right? So Brooklyn is basically out. Washington's definitely out. Oladipo didn't come back for Indiana. But and I think for guys in those teams, it's, I get it. It's like, why quarantine for 2 months to lose in the first round? So from that perspective, it kind of makes sense. It probably was too big originally, but I guess you had to get all the teams in for the TV contracts. You know, it's all about money ultimately. And, you know, it's a lot of money, so I'm not mad at them. Everyone's got to make money.
Yeah, you also, you had an article recently about the Rockets and how they might be kind of slept on a little bit as like a title contender in this like shortened, restarted season. So like, do you think that the possibility of there being a fluky champion this year is a lot higher because of this whole restart situation? Or do you think like the most talented teams are still going to be the most talented teams? And so you're not expecting too much out of the ordinary, but obviously like, if someone gets the virus like midway through a series, that could change something.
I think that's the main thing, right? Like well, no one can really predict that. What would happen? And what if LeBron gets the virus? Are they going to play that? I kind of doubt it, but how it's going to look, I don't know. I mean, I expect the best teams to still win. It's still basketball. And I do wonder how much not having home court is going to affect things. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're a lower seeded team, right? You always count on having your home games to kind of get yourself back in the mix. So, oh, you're down 2-0. We're going back to our place the next 2 games. Make this a series. Well, now you're down 2-0. You're down 2-0. There's just 3 more games in Orlando, right?
Yeah.
So I could see the best teams winning easier, actually, if they're healthy, if their guys don't get sick. That's the part that's obviously unknowable.
Yeah, the home court, I think, will be really interesting. The lack of home court will be fascinating to watch because, I mean, even when you just look at the standings, it's pretty crazy how some of these teams have such drastic splits. Like, Philly was 29-2 at home this year. I can't believe that's not even a typo. And then horrible on the road. Miami had similar splits. And, like, when you look at those two teams, I think Miami is a team that relies a lot on execution. But maybe not as much talent compared to the other teams in the mix in the Eastern Conference. And then Philly is loaded with talent, but the fit is terrible. So those two teams are so like diametrically opposed. But even then, like, it just, it's so interesting to see how home court can be a really huge advantage for some teams, just kind of willy-nilly. And not having that, I think it's just interesting to see how, without that factor involved, if we can see, you know, upsets or what exactly is going to happen.
Yeah, it's definitely like a little controlled experiment as to the value of home court.
Yeah, for sure. So getting into more specifics about the Nets, in your article, Dinwiddie had confirmed that he had coronavirus, but hadn't confirmed that he was out for the season. Now he is. So in the article, you talked a lot about Caris LeVert and how a lot would be on his shoulders for Brooklyn in terms of ball handling, in terms of scoring, all that. So wanted to get your thoughts on him. Josh and I have watched him for a few years now. He's shown flashes. He's had a lot of injuries, obviously, but now it seems like this is an opportunity for him to really showcase what he can do either as a part of the Nets core and maybe like as that third guy alongside KD and Kyrie next year, or as part of a trade. So from a Caris LeVert perspective, what are you looking for to see? What aspects of his game are you looking at specifically in the restart?
Well, I mean, I think it's kind of what you were saying. It's just his chance to run the offense. It's really, this is almost since like when he first started, what, last season, those first two or three weeks before he got hurt the first time or whatever time that was. This will be his first time since then where he's the guy, right? Because then he came back last year with D'Angelo's team.
Yeah.
He was kind of sitting with, and Dinwiddie had stepped up too. And then this year, you know, Kyrie and Dinwiddie. It just seems like LeVert, the best version of LeVert, needs the ball in his hands. So just to see what that looks like will be interesting. I think that makes the Nets at least somewhat interesting compared to some of the other teams at the bottom of the East. Is just they have this potential in this young player who I've always really liked. And I just kind of want to see what he can do. Like, for me, I mean, I feel like, if I remember correctly, I think he would play better than D'Angelo in the playoffs last year.
Yep.
Like, the guy's got a ton of talent. So just to see what he can do as a guy will be really interesting.
Another thing that's really interesting is RockAuto.com. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and super easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Best of all, those prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com.
Yeah, I've always wondered with him. I think he, as you mentioned, is better with the ball in his hands. I just never know if he, you know, he's already 25 years old. Like, will he be able to put it together and really be a top scorer on, not a great team, but a good to average team? Because, I don't know, he always strikes me as someone that's probably going to end up more as a good stats, like mediocre, bad team guy. But I think his reputation around the league is someone who's thought of as a really, you know, quality young player that could morph into something more. What do you see his potential being? Because maybe it's just that I get down on him watching him night in and night out and need to look at it from a less kind of obstructed viewpoint.
Well, I mean, the big thing is opportunity, right? If his destiny is to be the best player on a bad team, well, he hasn't had a chance to do that in a while. So can he do enough with this opportunity here to get the opportunity somewhere else? Like, everything is all contextual, right? So, I mean, I think for sure if he played on, like, Charlotte, he could put up big numbers. Now it's just a matter of getting to a team like that. And then what does he want to do with himself? I don't know. Like, does he want to be the best player on his own team? Probably. Most guys do. He's young enough where I don't think he wants necessarily to just spot up off KD and Kyrie for the next 4 years.
Yeah, one thing that I was, like, not quite sure which side I landed on about this is, like, do you think he's more or less likely to be traded if he plays well in this restart? Because I could see, like, if he plays, like, really, really well, maybe you're like, okay, he's the third star. He's kind of becoming that guy that we want to fit next to KD and Kyrie. But, like, there's also a point where it's like, okay, maybe his trade value is at its highest right now. So I don't know. What do you think about like how the quality of his play will affect whether or not he gets moved?
Well, I mean, I think his trade value would be higher, but it wouldn't mean his value to the Nets is much higher, right?
Right.
Because if he plays well in this role, that's not a role he's going to have next year regardless. Because Dinwiddie's coming back too, right? He's got 1 year on his contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And next year, he's the fourth option. So what he does in Orlando won't really affect that from Brooklyn's perspective. So I think him playing well here would make it, I would think, more likely for him to get traded because the other teams want that. And Brooklyn would know they have something that's not going to be as valuable a year from now, right? If he plays well here and his value is higher, then he goes in the next season, he's back in a smaller role playing off the ball, his value lowers. So then they have like a window to trade him this offseason.
Right. Yeah, and so just sticking with that theme, like where do you think he could fit if the Nets were to trade him? Like they've been tied to Bradley Beal in Washington. There's been talk for a long time actually about an Aaron Gordon trade with the Magic. Is there a situation you think
that he'd fit? That's interesting.
Yeah. What do you think about like those two or if there's like another one that I didn't mention there?
Because I think my first thought is I don't think Bradley Beal wants to play in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
That's my first thought. Like Bradley Beal just spent 8 years playing off John Wall. Now he's going to have to go to Brooklyn and play off KD and Kyrie. He's just coming to his prime now. My guess is he's going to be Beal's going to want his own team. So I feel like that's probably not going to happen, trade Beal to Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think Aaron Gordon is like the guy everyone kind of wants, right? He's the perfect. He's kind of like that big the piece that could be moved, could be better, different, want a better team. That makes sense to me. I mean, other than that, then you just kind of got to go through the bad teams and see if the bad teams are kind of player Brooklyn would want, right? Because that's really the question is, if you're trading LeVert, what are you going to get back for him? I mean, I like Gordon. Gordon makes a ton of sense. I don't know. I was actually looking at what y'all called me trying to find teams. I'm not sure. Did y'all have anyone else in mind?
I think there's two avenues it can go. It can be kind of packaging LeVert with other guys on the Nets for a bigger star like a Beal. But I think, as you said, like why would Beal want to take a step back in his usage a ton by going to the Nets and vice versa? The Nets still have a ton of roster holes if they package LeVert and other depth pieces for a Beal. I think the other way is kind of similar to what you had pointed to, where maybe you look at LeVert and trade him to a bad team that needs someone to kind of sop up usage and has a couple interesting pieces there that you can fit around KD, Kyrie, and Dinwiddie, because the Nets do already have those like three top scorers in place, which is really rare. Now you just need guys that can defend and hit threes and are comfortable being in a lower usage role. And it's no guarantee they're even going to have some of their guys that fill that role now, given, things like Joe Harris and free agency.
Yeah, it's just hard to find that perfect fit. I'm looking through a league right now because, like, the bad teams don't necessarily have the kind of players that Talkman would want anyway. So it's just hard. I'm not sure. That's a good question.
Yeah, it's also hard to say, like, who, besides LeVert, like, if they were to package him with guys, who should be moved because, like, there's just been so much inconsistency. And like you said about like what this short sample size will mean for next year, probably very little because it's not really what the team is going to look like. This whole season has kind of been like that. Like KD didn't play. Kyrie played, I think, 20 games total. So like all of the role players, guys like Torian Prince, Joe Harris, like they haven't really had an opportunity to play off of those superstar guys. And you are kind of just assuming like, okay, I think this guy's skill set will project to like compliment those guys, but you don't really know. And so it's the same thing like with trading for someone, like you really have no idea how the personalities are going to mesh, how anything's going to mesh. And it's been really tough to see like how a guy like Torian Prince, who the Nets traded for and extended, like how he's going to fit with KD and with Kyrie, because he's been in a completely different role than that this season. And he's really struggled in it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he'll struggle when those guys are back. So it's really complicated to try to project all this with so little data, I guess.
And the other thing is, like, so Jock Vaughn is saying might get to keep the job. I was surprised when I heard that.
Yeah. Me too.
They don't want to make him, like, into such a lame duck before shipping him off into the bubble. But I think, I don't know, he's in a really tough situation right now.
Yeah. What do you think about Tyronn Lue? I feel like that made the most sense of all the guys I heard.
Yeah, we ran down like a few of the possibilities a few months ago. I think once Kenny was let go, Ty Lue was definitely at the top of like the big names who are actually being considered. There were a few other like assistant coaches that we had talked about. Sam Cassell was someone who I thought could be a potential good fit. But Ty, like, he has that relationship with Kyrie. He's been working with Doc Rivers. So I think like he kind of can blend a lot of different worlds, and I think he'd be a good fit.
What do you think of Kenny being let go in the first place, Jonathan?
I assume that Kyrie and KD didn't like him. Right, that's the natural assumption.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Once the like starting DJ the very next game over Jared Allen was kind of like that kind of laid all the cards out on the table, I thought. But yeah, also we wanted to talk to you, Jonathan, about Jared Allen, just because you have followed him for a long time, and he's been kind of thrown into these trades or these trade rumors a little bit as somewhat of an afterthought. I feel like either like him plus LeVert or him plus Dinwiddie. I feel like it's never just him as like the subject of a trade rumor. So I want to get your thoughts on what you think his value is, either to the Nets or as a potential trade chip.
I've always liked him. I actually thought he was the best of the three Texas bigs that went under Shaka. So you had him, Bamba, and Jackson Hayes. Mm-hmm. I thought he was the best of the three, but at the same time, he's still, you know, he's your pretty prototypical spread pick and roll five. It was tough to see Embiid destroy him last year. That's the concern, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially in the East, because Embiid's always out there, or Giannis, right? You're going to have your center has to guard those guys, most likely. So that's tough. And then his trade value is kind of hurt by the whole DeAndre thing,
mm-hmm.
right? Stats are down, his role is down. This is big for him to kind of get a chance to reestablish himself as much as LeVert with DeAndre out of there. And I think for me, the biggest thing, if I was a Nets fan, I'd be worried about, because ultimately, right, like if you look at guys at KD's level, like KD, Kawhi, LeBron, they're basically run the whole organization.
Yeah.
So you're kind of at the mercy of their player evaluation skills. And also, too, there's just, I think when you're the GM, one thing LeBron and Kawhi have shown as player GMs, you kind of have to be ruthless, right? Like, LeBron traded his whole team away. Like, whatever, he didn't care. Kawhi, like, basically had the Clippers over the gun to get Paul George. And there's, like, a certain level of, like, I don't care. I got to maximize my value and my team. And it kind of feels like KD with DeAndre, he just went with his friends. And if you're the GM, you can't have that attitude. That's just not going to lead to a long-term success. That to me is that's what concerns me. I think if I was a Nets fan, like basically because KD is competing against Kawhi and LeBron, right, and Giannis to an extent, those kind of players. And Kawhi and LeBron have shown that they're going to get the best players, right? LeBron wouldn't even bring Carmelo in. That's one of his best friends.
Cold-blooded.
And he was like, nah. He's like, my second unit wing minutes are too valuable to put you in there. I'm sorry if you're out of the league. I don't care. Like I'm part of a championship. Doesn't matter to me at all. Your feelings. We'll see if KD is like that when it comes down to it.
Yeah, I think also the important thing there is like KD obviously is a all-time player, surefire Hall of Famer, but coming off this Achilles injury, it's unclear if he's going to kind of return to his his top three player status in the league. He could more so be, you know, a top 10, top 12 player now, and that's probably not something that you want to have your franchise over a barrel. You want to reserve it really for those guys who you know are going to be transcendent currently in a LeBron, Giannis, Kawhi, and, you know, KD right now, we're not sure if he's going to get there, but he still has that authority with the Nets, which I think makes things even more dangerous because, you know, it wasn't too long ago where the Nets were going out of control, trying to, you know, appease star players and Deron Williams, who they thought was a star, but really turned out not to be so, and it set the franchise back a long time. Obviously, KD is miles and miles better than Deron Williams could ever be, but he's not sure how he's going to be off this injury, especially given that once he does start playing, hopefully this fall, it will be, what, 20 months since the injury? Or 16 months?
Yeah, I mean, I think as, like, it was always going to be KD in his 30s would move towards more of a Dirk-like player as he slowed down, as he got a little older, got some more miles on him. And I kind of imagine that's the next step for him now in this new role in Brooklyn. even if he slows down, he can still guard, score at will, right? He can still post up guys, shoot over them. So I would think then, if KD's going to play like Dirk, you just got to get a lot of athletes around him, right? If he's going to be a little slower, if he needs to play in the half court, if he needs to kind of set up, walk down, post up, then it's a matter of getting really long athletic players to kind of cover from on defense. That's why I kind of like the idea of Kurucs with KD, but what happened to Kurucs this year?
Yeah, a lot happened. He had like an off-court thing that was, I think, in the summer of 2019.
Yeah, with his girlfriend, right?
Yeah, that kind of...
What happened?
I think he had like a court date. I don't know if it actually has been resolved or it's still like ongoing. But regardless, that like completely, I think, derailed him mentally. And then he would just like in preseason, I remember he would just get into like a lot of like garbage time scuffles with the opposing teams, which like he just seemed like he was kind of in his head. They sent him down to the G League back up a few times. So like, I don't know, he kind of fell out of the rotation. But like Josh and I have talked about how he's the exact like physical profile of what you would want, like you just said. And like going into this bubble, they really have no one who could, like, they still don't even with him, but like they have no one who could come close to guarding like a Giannis in a first round matchup. And he's really the only guy physically. He's too skinny, but he at least has the length to somewhat bother him. And like you said, I think him and KD with like someone to play like that Tyson Chandler role to Dirk in 2011, someone like that at center, like I think that that
or like
could
the Sean Marion role, right?
Right. Yeah. Like, just like you said, like long defenders, and he's really the only guy that they have who would fit that physically.
I mean, I think that to me, as much as I read an article about LeVert, it's Kurucs and Allen too, who are kind of interesting guys to watch in this setting.
Yeah, he'll definitely get a chance. I think he had just lost all confidence earlier in the season. Both in his shot, which wasn't that great, but, you know, I think had some makings into a decent three-point shooter, and then was just, like, committing, like, really, like, just careless travels or turnovers with the ball. But if the Nets were to give up on him after this season, I mean, I think he's someone that a team would be really smart to get on the cheap. I hope that doesn't happen, but I actually am pretty bullish on his potential long-term, just because I think he has a good feel for the game, and he's a good athlete, and it's not super easy to find those types of guys who are 6'9".
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with us, right? All these young guys in Brooklyn, this is kind of their chance. What do you think about Musa this year? Is he going to play?
Unfortunately, I think he may have to play a little bit. He was so brutal. I mean, he just, I don't think...
They gave him a shot. I was a little surprised he's playing over at Kurucs for a while.
Yeah, they did. I mean, I think, like, he has a lot of confidence, but he can't finish getting to the lane at all. He's just so slow. His shot's not that good, and he'll gun it from anywhere. So he has a lot of confidence, and he's been a decent scorer in the G League, but he's, like, that traditional, like, quadruple A player, if you want to compare it to baseball, that just doesn't have any of the sauce needed to be effective offensively at the NBA level. And then defensively, you know, I think we all knew that he was going to be a lost cause, but it just has not worked for him 2 years in Brooklyn. Not to say that, you know, there's no hope for him in the league, but I was pretty down when he first got drafted, and it's been a rough 2 years for him.
Yeah, the one guy who I think, I guess he's still kind of young, who I would want to see a lot more of in the bubble is TLC. I think he played really well, like, before the season got suspended, and I think, given his kind of, like, physical frame, he could be another guy who is able to kind of help defensively on the wing.
Okay, actually, I just found this. So I went back and looked. I was asking this international scout about Musa, and this is what he told me. So this is from like 4 years ago. He goes, good offensive talent, but not athletic or quick for the NBA, and bad attitude. I mean, he is crazy, literally. I don't want him around my team, and he has a back issue, too.
Ringing endorsement.
Yeah, not a lot of positives. Yeah.
He does look he's a very sharp dresser on the bench, that when he gets when he's not on the roster for that night. So I have to give him credit for that.
Yeah, Josh and I were kind of surprised that they cut Pinson instead of him. Not that it like ultimately matters, but I don't know. Pinson at least has like a good attitude.
Is that what that was? Was he a first round pick, Musa?
Yeah, he was like 20.
Yeah, so he has a guaranteed contract then. That's a lot of time.
Yeah, yeah. But even at that point, I don't know. Pinson, like, the Nets have had such bad mojo this year that you think they want to keep a little bit of positive stuff. But financially speaking, obviously, the Musa decision makes a lot more sense, even though basketball-wise, it's kind of a wash for both of them. Jonathan, looking forward to the draft. I think you've been known for some of your spicy draft takes. Brandon Clark last year, having him at, I think it was number 2 overall on your board.
I had about three. I had Ja ahead of him. That wasn't completely crazy.
Okay. But anyone this year, the Nets, if they make the playoffs, which it looks like they will now that Beal is sitting out for the Wizards, will have to give their first round pick to Atlanta. But they have Philly's first round pick by way of a couple trades that we were trying to figure out before this that have come through the Clippers. But anyone you think in that kind of 18 to 22 range that you like as a sleeper that the Nets might be worth investing in? I think what we're thinking is that they really kind of need a home run and swing for upside because of some of the timelines that this team has right now with Kyrie and KD.
The guy I really like is Patrick Williams from Florida State, but I can't imagine he'll be available at 18. I think he'll move up as the draft gets closer. He's like a 6'8", 230 combo forward, pretty athletic, can dribble and shoot. I think he's got the guy, of all the guys in this draft, he has a chance, I think, to really kind of outperform where he's ranked right now. But I can't see him getting to 18 when it's all said and done. I think if we're talking about like long athletic guys, I think Josh Green in Arizona would make sense. Chris Smith from UCLA. Sadiq Bey from Villanova is probably the safest pick. Like if you want a guy for sure can play 20 minutes next year, spread the floor, move the ball, guard, I think it's probably Sadiq Bey. If you're going for upside, probably Josh Green or Robert Woodard from Mississippi State. Green and Woodard are your two, probably two of the best wing athletes in this draft with decent three-point shots, decent feel for the game, a lot of potential there. I would say those are kind of the guys I'd be looking at. Cassius Stanley, too, from Duke. Same basic idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think I really like Cassius Stanley. I just don't know if the Nets need someone like that. I mean, he is very raw, but I think he does have a lot of potential and good athlete. So Josh Green, I really like a lot. And Patrick Williams, I think it's a good point. Like, especially given the Florida State guys recently, I feel like they always tend to outperform where they're drafted, looking at guys like Malik Beasley and others. So I think someone will probably snap him up in before 18. But I was kind of shocked that that I guess he had such a good season coming out in his freshman year because he was a highly touted kid in high school. But I thought he was more on the raw side, but he was pretty impressive. So I think definitely he'll get some looks kind of late lottery. Right outside that, as you mentioned.
Yeah, do you think it'll be like a little bit less movement this year leading up to the draft just because there obviously wasn't the tournament and it's going to be really hard for teams to have in-person workouts? Like the NFL draft, I know, was kind of more locked into what a lot of the mocks had coming into things. Do you think that'll duplicate in the NBA or do you think maybe because it's still so far out in advance that teams have a lot of time to watch a lot of tape and have things move around more?
Yeah, it's so hard to say. That's a good question. It's really, really hard to say until like we don't even know where the world will be in 2-3 months, yeah. Right? Maybe there'll be like another spike. Maybe there won't. Maybe workouts can happen. Maybe they won't. It's just hard. It's really hard to know right now. I think it feels like right now everyone's focused on the bubble and the draft has kind of gotten a little lost. So there's not much people talking about it. That's a good question. I really don't know.
Josh, anything else you wanted to ask Jonathan?
No, I think, you know, we covered it. I mean, maybe if you have any, we've all found ourselves in the working remote world and I know that you are an expert of it, having to work for the Ringer from Dallas. Any tips that the rest of the world can use that you might have mastered in the working from home life?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say for starters, like I treat it like I was going to work. So I don't like to like lay in bed and work. Like I get up, shower, do my whole morning routine, and then work somewhere in the house. So like, I mean, although like, you know, I'll change clothes too. So psychologically, it feels like I'm going to work right now. Mm-hmm. Whereas the temptation is kind of to lay around, lay on the couch, and you're kind of, and then what happens is, especially if you're single, it's like your work and home, it kind of like blends together in this weird blob, because you're always kind of working, but you're always not at the same time. I think that's where it kind of gets tricky with working from home. I think it requires a lot of discipline. So like discipline with your time, with getting, quote unquote, getting ready and getting in routines. Routines are really helpful because they kind of have to be self-created. Because right, when you're going into the office, the routine is pretty automatic. You know, got to get ready, get in the car, or I guess you're in New York, take the train or whatever. Mm-hmm. But when you're working from home, you kind of have to create your own routines, I've found.
Yep, I like it. It's something I've struggled with, but I will take that advice to heart as I'm still kind of mired in this working remote world. Marcus, I know you are too. Jonathan, thanks so much for your time. Anything you want to plug?
Not really. Check out theringer.com. Ringer NBA show will be back on with more shows closer to the season as the restart starts. And let's just hope this all goes through. We all have content to talk about.
Yeah. For sure. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, have a good one, y'all.
So that was our interview with Jonathan Charks from TheRinger.com. Thought he made a lot of really insightful points. Excited to dig into some of those guys he mentioned at the end who could potentially be in range for the Nets to draft this coming fall. You can follow us on Twitter at LockedOnNets. Josh is at JMBass_. I am at Marcus Barahal. We'll be back with some more podcasts very soon. The NBA season is creeping up. A restart is right around the corner, so we will hopefully be ramping things up as we get towards that. Until next time, be well. Bye.